Wind Down with Jana Kramer, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Okay, so super excited about this week's episode. We have Zach Clark coming on the show. He was the winner of Tayshia's season of the recent Bachelorette. So we're super excited to talk all about his road to recovery from his addictions and just...
his road to being the victor on The Bachelorette.
The victor. Also super excited because we have Pittsburgh Pam joining us today. Hey, Pittsburgh Pam.
Hey.
So Pamlin. Pamlin is an amazing friend. We actually met in Los Angeles, and then I told her, we were moving to Nashville, and then when she was debating moving, I was like, come move in our sub. So now we're neighbors. And it's just
our daughters are besties. That's great.
The daughters are besties. She's just extraordinaire of everything and crafts. Honestly, like I said this the other day when I was with the kids, how do you? Because I'm just not a crafty mom, and sometimes I feel really bad about that. Like I feel guilty.
We all have our strengths, my dear.
Well, and
yeah, but your strengths kind of go across the board here.
Yeah, because your strengths are like, I mean, you like. The stuff that you do in the neighborhood with the kids, and even when Jolie comes over, it's like, oh man, you made that over at, you know, at Pamlin's house, and like the kids come here and they're like, we watched Aladdin. So I'm like,
we played with Play-Doh.
How do you, I mean, do you just love doing arts and crafts, or was it something that your mom did with you?
Yeah, I mean, it was something like I like grew up doing. Like my mom is definitely, you know, like that. And so I think, yeah, you're just like taught, and it's just kind of like all you know. So then I had these like two little girls, and you know, started doing it, and now I like created these monsters where it's like if we're not making something super fun or doing something creative, they're like, why aren't we doing, you know, crafts today? And I'm like, oh my gosh, what have I done? But it's definitely fun. Sometimes I do need a break. So
you set the standard so high so early that you there's no way back.
Yeah, all my like friends are like, man, you really messed up. Like you just, you know, you did it wrong.
I mean,
set them low.
You guys are the ones where, you know, we have a lot of neighborhood kids that are around the same age, and when, you know, your oldest comes to the bus stop and the other kids I'll come to the bus stop. Like,
they, like, look her up and down.
Say all the, yeah, first of all, your daughter's dressed better than the adults.
And then Pamela goes, oh, I made that from, like, the curtain thing.
Right, the leftover like, curtain fabric.
Of course you did last night.
And then, like, say all the kids had, like, a science project. Everyone else would have, like, rubber bands and, like, some sticks or something. And Pamela would have to get, like, a trailer to haul, like, her daughters up the street because it's so big and perfect. And
oh, you guys are
this is the way it is.
Too kind.
And you have a book coming out.
I do.
Tell us about the kids' book coming out.
Thank you.
It's a kids' book, but also you explain it.
Okay. So the book is called Gratitude the Great, and it is a children's picture book, and it's all about gratitude and kind of, you know, ways to incorporate daily gratitude rituals, you know, into your lives. And we all know that like children aren't just going to come up with these things. It's the parents that have to initiate it and really, you know, instill that message like into children early. And it's just so much more than saying like, thank you. That's not like the gratitude that I'm talking about. I'm talking about like gratitude from your soul and like knowing like, you know, feeling actual gratitude, like, you know, somebody did something so nice for you, like, let's feel it because it's a feeling, and then let's act on it by, you know, writing a note or making sure we, you know, say special things to people. But there's all these different rituals that like we do as a family that I also like incorporate into this like very special story. And, you know, again, it is a kid's book, but
it's like, so good.
Like I said before, you know, the best virtues in the world are not taught, they're caught. So it's like we as parents have to live these lives, you know, of gratitude and all these other amazing virtues out there. And then our kids will just follow. And, you know, for me, gratitude, I call it like the greatest natural superpower in the world. It is, does not discriminate. It is free to the entire universe, and it can change your life. Like if you start your foundation as a child living in gratitude, it, I mean, there's science behind it. you know, it will forever like change the trajectory of your life. And so I'm so passionate about it. It's changed my life. So I wrote a children's book about it and it's coming out May 4th.
So they should follow you on your Instagram.
Yes. House of Bashery and also Gratitude the Great. I now have an Instagram handle for that. Yay.
How did you or how do you with your daughters? Because I feel like, you know, it'd be simple or easier to teach or show them how to be grateful or express gratitude when someone does something nice for you, right? And do something in return out of gratitude. How do you do it where it's more of a, because, you know, as adults, we're, if you do some work, mm-hmm. you're able to have those moments of gratitude where Jan and I will share them. They'll just kind of come, right? They'll, it's almost like a daydream. You're mm-hmm. just like, man, I'm just so grateful for where
it's
my
like
life
this
is.
High it, on this life.
Right.
Thing.
Like in that moment. So. Mm-hmm. Have you addressed that with your girls and how do you kind of, you know, help push them along to understand that concept of gratitude?
Yes. Right. Because like when, you know, little kids, it's a lot of the tangible, like present things.
Correct.
Right. And so, one thing we do, we call it pillow chat and it's at night. And this is like in the book, but, we have this heart crystal and we think that like, you know, crystals like, you know, send out all this great like energy. And so we each hold the crystal and we talk about like something that we were like grateful for that happened today or, you know, a feeling that we were grateful for today. So it's not about like I got a, you know,
I got a new LOL doll.
Right. It's nothing like that. And so, you know, I always go first to kind of like set the tone and it's, you know, nothing that's tangible. It's like, you know, I'm so grateful for picking those beautiful flowers with you on our special mommy and daughter walk today. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of then go with that same theme. It's like that kid in class who like, you know, what's your favorite thing? The one first kid says, and then all the kids say the same thing.
Right.
So it's kind of like setting the tone. So we do that every night. And then what I noticed, we've been doing it for years. And what I noticed is then they're able to kind of acknowledge those special moments and feelings then like throughout the day. Like, I mean, so many times, you know, me and Harley will be driving and she's like, Mommy, these trees are so beautiful. Like, I'm so grateful to see them.
That's awesome.
You know, and that, then it just, like I was saying, then it just kind of snowballs and then it just becomes your normal life. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and then when you get older and tough things start to happen, you know, and you're like salty at the world, mm-hmm. you know, because something bad happened, you can then hopefully like pull in those tools to find the beauty in things that, you know, money can't buy or.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah, I love that. And Mike and I have kind of similar to that. Like, we've been saying every morning, like, I'm grateful for you. And it kind of mm-hmm. just sets mm-hmm. the tone of the day mm-hmm. so that we're not high on like negative energy or, you know, it's mm-hmm. just like we are acknowledging each other, taking a second to.
Yeah, we just wanted to start the day. We just found ourselves like contesting each other early in the day mm-hmm. at times. Like, why? It's like, why can't we just start with like, almost like a clean slate.
Right.
Like, so even if the night before wasn't great or the day before wasn't great, we're refreshing
yep.
that morning being like, look, I'm grateful for you. Because yeah. at the end of the day, I am. Or I appreciate you or whatever it is.
And also like, you know, just like the energy of that coming out of your mouth uh-huh. and sending that message to the universe, you know, yep. is going to get like bounced back to you. And so it's kind of like if you're ever thinking something that's nice, say it. Say mm-hmm. it to anybody, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, you're so good at that. I feel like, Jana, you're always like, you know, you guys are so, such nice.
To the window, to the wall.
But it really, I think, you know, makes a difference. And so I just wanted to do this book to try to like, just keep, you know, encouraging parents. Like, this is our job.
That's
you know,
so
and
cool.
we need a reminder
yeah.
all the time.
You're right. Well, I love you, Pittsburgh, Pam. Thanks for coming on. You're
Thank
also
you guys.
A big, big Bachelor fan.
Yes.
So excited to get Zach Clark on. Let's take a break and then we'll get him on.
All right, so we have Mr. Bachelorette winner himself, Zach Clark, with us on the show today. Zach, how you doing, man?
I'm good, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. I was really excited about you. First of all, I was a huge fan of you on the show. I got to be honest, and Pittsburgh Pam knows this. I I never really watched an entire season. I usually watch like the beginning and then I'll maybe watch the end. But Tayshia was by far the best bachelorette ever. I mean, she was just really confident. She was, you know, just so true. And I loved watching you because I was like, okay, thank you. Like someone that has depth and that has a journey and has been through and, you know, but you come in with such confidence. And I remember telling my husband, I was like, this is my favorite dude right here. I'm like, I hope he wins. Mm-hmm. Like, he's awesome. I just love your whole journey. And then obviously we talk a lot about addiction on the show. So I'm just excited to get in on all of it right now. But so, yeah, I'm really excited. I guess one of the things that I was kind of curious was because you seemed so confident describing your mm-hmm. journey with Tayshia. Did you, because it didn't come off like you were nervous at all. I mean, are you just kind of like, this is my life and this is what I've been through in the addictions? And, or were you nervous telling her that thinking, oh man, she might send me home?
I mean, my attitude around that was it's just like any other date I've been on, right? Like mm-hmm. if she's not going to love me for who I am, then it's better that we end this thing now than get into it and come to find out that there's going to be an issue there. So for me, like I'm really proud of who I am and mm-hmm. it's a huge part of me, my recovery, obviously, and it allows me to live the badass next level life that I get to live. So yeah, I was just going to lay it all out there. And she obviously, that was one of the things that I was most attracted to in her is that not only with me, but with all the guys there, she was able to take on a lot of and, you know, hold space for us. And I think you saw there were some guys there who've been through some stuff. So I definitely noticed that early on with her.
Was that when you talked about the addiction and your past and everything, you know, whether on screen or off, did she show a lot of understanding? Because there's some people that don't really understand the concept unless they're directly affected by addiction or they just have never experienced any kind of it. So was she understanding of the whole concept of what it means and all that?
She was definitely open-minded to it. You know, mm-hmm. it's funny, Mike, I think my experience in life has told me usually you tell someone you're a drug addict or an alcoholic or whatever it is, and it goes one of two ways. It's like, you know, they know that there's a family member or someone that they've been associated with in their lives that have struggled with it. And so they have, you know, some knowledge or education around the topic, or they know nothing about it and they want to throw you in this bucket of like, mm-hmm. this dude is weird or sick or whatever it is. And it's funny, she was kind of in the middle. Like she didn't have any direct, I think, experience with it, but she definitely had an open mind and she asked her all the right questions. And some of the things you hear earlier on, like, can I drink and then kiss you? I'm like, yeah, you're good.
That's so sweet though.
Yeah, it is sweet that she was conscious of even that.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a sweetheart.
How was it when you did the hometown dates? Because maybe you guys did talk about it, but I don't remember it being aired. Was that something that you talked about with her dad or no?
So I'm trying to think how that played. First of all, the hometowns, you know, I caught a lot of because I did mine in New York City, quote unquote, and I'm from Philly. So Philly was not happy. You don't want Philly against you ever.
No, do not mess with Philly.
It's all right. It's a long life. I'll make it up to him. No, I think her dad, yes, I got into what I do for work with her old man. And I think that spoke to my just general experience in life. It's kind of like, okay, I run these programs and do interventions and help people get sober. Okay, how did you get involved in that? Then that always leads into, mm-hmm. I don't really have much to hide behind because it's not like I'm sober and I work in finance. I'm sober and I work in the field. It's like, it kind of hits you right in the face. So mm-hmm. we got into it and, you know, he was super open-minded to it all, which I appreciated.
Was, you know, in Release Recovery, which is the, you know, what you founded with your buddy, Justin, is it 12-step based or is there a lot of other elements to it?
Look, we're big believers in 12-step, you know, mm-hmm. we've seen the 12 steps, obviously, change a lot of lives. And it's crazy to think that, like, you know, the stockbroker and this doctor back in the 1930s, like, got together and wrote the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's still like mm-hmm. getting a ton of people sober today. But I will say that, you know, in our programs, there are guys and girls that come in that are super resistant to 12-step, and it's our job to kind of, you know, just be Sherpas and tell them that like, that's okay. You know, and there's other programs and there's other ways to get connected, but it's not just because you're not into 12-step recovery does not mean you have an excuse to not get connected to other human beings. Mm-hmm. You know, like we're not going to let that be a front. And we're very clear on that, you know, from the outset.
Have you had people come through that have suffered from sex and love addiction?
Yeah, of course, man. Like we always talk about, right? Like seven, it's kind of like seven trash cans, five lids. I mean, a lot of times when we see people get sober, that's when a sex addiction flares up or an mm-hmm. eating disorder flares up. And, you know, I never personally had the sex thing. I know a lot of people who have, and it's real. Mike, I read a little bit about you, man. Congrats on some of the stuff you're doing. It's inspiring for sure. And it's for a man to come out and be open with that stuff is cool. You know, like I need guys like you in my corner. So
No question. Right back at you.
I'm curious though about, cause I always like feel for Mike, because if someone says, yeah, I'm an alcoholic or I'm I was a drug addict. They're like, oh man, I'm so sorry. But when Mike says that he's a sex addict, people are like, oh, like it's like this.
There's still a stigma around it.
Yeah. Where it's, they either don't believe it or they think it's an excuse or, I mean, how are you, I guess, like with your recovery and addiction program you're doing, it's like how are you helping, I guess, not like normalize this addiction, but also to make the person not feel so shameful and with any of their addictions?
Yeah, it's a big deal for me. And I think it's one of the things that as my career, my life continues to evolve, that word stigma, I don't even know how I feel about it, right? Like sometimes I feel like when I use that word, it stigmatizes it more almost, you know, because of just like the sound. I don't know, something weird with that word. It's like, I feel like we're actually doing ourselves a disservice. I mean, I think for me, that just comes back to sharing my experience with people, like really being able to sit them down and, you know, aside from getting engaged to Tayshia and having this beautiful love story unfold, like one of the beautiful things that's come of the show is just this ability to say to people who are in early recovery, like, look, literally anything is possible if you just fasten your seatbelt and do some of these things and have a willingness to be honest and share with people. And I think it's one of the biggest hurdles that we face in early recovery is just that guilt, that shame. How do I date? How do I go out and have a drink? You know? Certainly with the sex addiction thing and guys that I know who have struggled with that. Yeah. There's a lot of guilt and shame around that. And then for their partner, you know, sticking it out with them and all that comes with it and having kids, you know, it's messy and it's gnarly, but, there's hope for sure.
With you being in recovery for the past, you've been sober since what, 2011?
Yeah. August 2011.
So for the last, you know, going on 10 years and this being your career too, do you find it difficult to not, like, say, put yourself on the show, for instance, where you have all these guys who are drinking, are doing these things where you, like, try not to be judgmental, be like, man, that guy probably needs to come to my program? Or, like, how do you kind of compartmentalize or separate that so you don't have this, like, judgmental mindset in certain moments like that?
Yeah, I've had to really learn to, you know, keep to myself on some of that stuff and just be there when people need me. You know, and I think some of my best work has been done by me saying nothing at all and just having people watch the way that I live. And I've had more people come back to me and say, it wasn't what you said. It's more of what I saw, you know, that was attractive to the way you were living your life. Typically when I call someone out on their shit or have an opinion, it doesn't go well. You know, it just doesn't, because they're not ready to hear it.
No, addicts don't like to be called out. Come on.
I can see that. I mean, some of the greatest virtues are, you know, caught, not taught. It's like, you know, by showing is probably better than calling out, for sure. I love that.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, like, you know, because Tayshia doesn't know this world as much, obviously you're helping her. Is there resources that, you know, do you think she should go to, or have you encouraged her to go to like an Al-Anon or any of those places so that she can understand or learn more about, you know, just behaviors and things like that?
Yeah, no, it's super cool. I mean, like, yes, obviously there's great resources out there with Al-Anon and Narnon and just family support groups, and a lot of treatment programs have, you know, parent support groups and that type of thing, or partner support groups. So those things are all things that we've started to discuss, and I think we'll get into a little bit more, obviously exposing herself to my personal recovery and what that looks like. And then, you know, as she gets to know some of my friends, you know, like going on a trip with a couple of my buddies who are sober and like their wives or partners are not, mm-hmm. like being able to connect with them on that level to show that, like, one, you know, we have a shitload of fun still and we're not like, you know, wet blankets, and two, that she's not alone, right? Like that there's other people out there. Like we always joke, every wedding I go to, I'm the last man standing. All the other people are blacked out.
So. I love that. What's the hardest part of sobriety for you? Like what's the biggest challenge with staying sober?
I get that question a lot. And I mean, it might sound untrue, but the hardest part of sobriety was living the way I used to live. Mm. You know, like this thing is not hard to do on a daily basis. Like the obsession to drink and drug for me has like lifted. You know, I don't think about that stuff. I guess if I had to say one thing, like I feel a lot. You know, I feel a lot. It's just like I feel other people's shit, I feel my shit. And you know, like I'm a guy that lives my life like I always feel like I'm missing out on something. Like I'm a hard charger, but even if I have like some crazy ass day, like I'll think about like the one shot I missed, you know, and that's just me wanting to be perfect and having a little compassion for myself. So.
And were you like that at all before the addictions? Like, did you have, cause you seem like you have this like amazing zest for life and just like, you know, full of joy and this light. Were there pieces of you like that before? And then you kind of just found them again, or what's that about?
Hell yeah. I mean, I had a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, like in high school, I was like, you know, my superlative was life of the party, you know? And like,
I figured, yeah.
You know? And so it was fun for a while. It was fun for a long time. And I still to this day have people in my life that I'll say, dude, like you didn't have an issue. I was like, bro, you were not out on the street with me doing what I was doing. Like I definitely, let's just stop it right there. So yeah, I think there's also the other things, like when I did get sober and I did start to, you know, live a different way, it was hard for some of those people in my life. Like there were pieces of me that definitely died.
Right.
You know, and like in some areas I was a little bit more serious and a little bit more reserved, and some of my closest friends and family had to say like, are you okay? Are you good? Everything all right? I'm like, yeah, I'm cool. Like I'm just not faced, you know, right. Like, so.
Zach, when was, cause I feel like, you know, we can relate in a way, well, in a lot of ways, but also, you know, obviously there's a lot of spotlight on you right now and with the addiction and with your past and in your journey, you know, I've had issues with the spotlight on me as well around my addictions and everything. And I'm trying to be a pillar of support for other men out there who struggle with addiction, let alone sex addiction. But I find myself, because, you know, I've been in the program 4 years, a year sobriety, but I find myself still doubting my own, you know, not my own recovery or strength and things, but just doubting myself, where it's like, why would someone want to like hear from me? Like, why would someone want to, you know, learn from me? Because I make up, when you have 10 years, it's a lot easier. So I guess my question is, at what point during your recovery did you start to see, like, really let go of that shame and feel confident in helping more people see, you know, be recovered?
I think the old saying is, like, at 5 years, you get your marbles back. So not to, but definitely that first year, like my brain just needed to heal. Like I just needed to like take a time out. And then I think after that, like I really started to find my footing with some of my language. And, you know, I'm a people pleaser by nature. So, you know, I learned how to say no, you know, and that was huge for me. And I really just leaned into the fact that, like, yeah, you know, there's a lot of smart ass people out there with Ivy League degrees and whatever else it is, but like my greatest experience or my greatest asset is my experience, and just leaning into that. And like, mm-hmm. you know, if you don't, I mean, you know how it is, Mike, like I had to learn how to be honest. I had to learn how to like truly be honest and not care what the other person said, and then actually like say things that I used to be in so much fear about, and have the person across the table react like, oh, that's cool. I'm like, wait, you're not gonna like, I'm not in trouble. I didn't do something wrong here.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Story of my life right there.
I mean, that right there, what you just said, because that's, you were always afraid that you were gonna get in trouble. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, just be honest, you know? For anyone that's listening that is having a hard time, what are some of the first steps to you know, to just be more honest, and where can they find help? Like, what are some great resources, and talk about, you know, what you're doing at Release Recovery?
No, I appreciate that question. I mean, you know, the hardest thing is asking for help. Mm-hmm. For me, that's the biggest thing. And there's nothing more heartbreaking than like when we get a call and we go in and we start to consult with the family, and you know, we're going to plan this family meeting where we're going to, I mean, I hate the word intervention, but essentially intervene, you know, and seeing that person on day zero, you know, and the family being a mess and all that stuff. You know, and still having that person, like the identified patient, if you will, say no, is heartbreaking. But it's what keeps me coming back, because I've seen that person, like I've been to that guy's wedding, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's like, that's the true gift in all this, right? And it takes time and patience, because recovery is not an overnight matter. But yeah, asking for help. I mean, you know, here at Release Recovery, like we've built a family and a community that's just, the doors are always open and the phone is always open. So certainly, you know, releaserecovery.com, you can check us out. If you call our main line, like we're going to get you pointed in the right direction. Absolutely. 100%. We started a non-for-profit early last year, the Release Recovery Foundation, where we're scholarshiping people who can't afford it to go get some help. I've, you know, for many years worked in this world where it's a lot of private pay, people who can quite frankly afford our services. And we just saw a huge need in the market to help those that couldn't afford it. So I got my shirt on today. We're going to be launching our 2021 fundraiser.
Awesome.
And all the proceeds from this guy is going to go towards, women and people of color getting treatment, because those are two communities that are really underserved in our world and borderline disrespected. You know, like I was in treatment with a bunch of white males, and the team that treated me was all, you know, white, you know, or whatever it was. And so we're passionate about the work. And then obviously, like, you know, there's Google it, you know, there's plenty of phone numbers out there to call, and there's 12 step communities and Smart Recovery and Refuge Recovery and a lot of things that you can do that are free. So asking for help, once you do that, the sky's the limit.
So is Release Recovery, is it inpatient or outpatient or both?
I think the best way to describe it, so we're a full service recovery company. So we have a 17 bed program for men north of New York City, about 45 minutes in Westchester County. Mm-hmm. And then we have two programs in the city, one for men and one for women. So 40 beds, and that's, it's all transitional living. So people that are coming out of treatment,
okay,
and struggling with drug addiction or some mental illness stuff, we help get them back up on their feet. They stay with us about 3 to 6 months. And then, you know, some of the other work we do with case management and some of the intervention consultation stuff I was talking about. So we do a lot. We've seen it all. Some gnarly shit going on.
You know, and you went to inpatient rehab?
Yeah, I did 4.5 months at a place out in Pennsylvania.
Okay. You know, it's always been a topic for me that I'm always interested in, because I commend and respect guys that have gotten sober without doing inpatient treatment. I just know for me personally, I never would have been able to if I didn't spend the 60 days I did inpatient. But, you know, is that something for you? I mean, not to say you doubt people that don't do something like that, but is it something where you're just like, if you're talking to somebody off the street and you're like, hey, you got to get into something. It's not just going to meetings. It's not just doing that. You have to kick, for me, again, I have to kickstart that. You got to find out where all this comes from. In my personal opinion, but I just want to know your take on it, being in the business.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a product of treatment, right? Like that's, I'm never going to tell anybody, like, if you can go to treatment, go. You know, who doesn't want to take a month, 2 months, 3 months to really work on themselves?
Yeah.
I went twice. The first time I went for a month, I was married at the time. Mm. And the best thing to come out of that was my wife learned what a boundary was. And the next time I got high, she kicked my ass out, you know? And for the next 8 months, I was ripping and running and whatever happened. And then I ended up back in treatment for 4.5 months, and mm-hmm. that was what I needed to do. And I'm very grateful for that experience. So if you can do the treatment, do treatment.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I mean, I love everything, this conversation. I was just thinking when you said your ex-wife, because I'm one of the reasons why I didn't leave Mike was I was like, I don't want someone else to get the version that like I deserve, that I worked for, that I have like.
That you thought you were going to get.
That I thought I was going to get. Like, I'm not going to get duped. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm not going to go through this pain and then have somebody else get you. Like, nuh-uh. Like, and you haven't made it easy the last 5 years.
You're too stubborn.
No. For that. I'm like. You know, so it's like, I can only imagine, you know, I'm sure she's so happy for you, you know, but as the other side, I'd have been like, damn it. Like, now yeah, you're amazing and so cool. Happy and, you know.
She's cool. She saved my life. I hope she knows that, you know, and like, I always say, like, Mike, nice job. But the true heroes in all this are the family members, you
100%.
Know, and like the people that stand by us because like.
There's no question.
We can talk offline, but it's you guys are the heroes. And that's, you know, I was saying it yesterday, I was talking to a friend and like, we get to go away. Mike was just saying like treatment, like, and the focus for us for however long we're there is just on us. And you guys are still out in the real world with kids and other family members and jobs. And you don't have in terms of education and resources and tools. So we're the lucky ones.
Yeah. Dang.
I agree with that.
That's sweet. I really needed that validation after all those years.
You're doing a good job.
Pittsburgh Pam, what you got?
Zach, do you think that, like, you know, because of your recovery, that it really kind of prepared you almost like for the show? Because I noticed that you were just always so like chill with the process, and it didn't seem to be like any of it affected you. There's a lot of guys that come in and just too much stuff gets in their head, and then they end up like sabotaging themselves and their whole experience. But I just like did not notice any of that with you.
No, I mean, I think my life prepared me for that moment, honestly, and not just the recovery piece, but. Mm-hmm. I come from a really good family, and you know, I was joking because it's like, you know, rehab, right? Like this season, and I don't know anything about the bat, like this whole thing was all new to me, but apparently there's a lot of travel and other stuff in other seasons, but we were in this bubble, which for me was like treatment again,
right?
Right? Take your phone. I'm like, sweet. I'm back in rehab. Like
all familiar. Chase some
cute girl and talk about your feelings in this camera. I'm like, I can do that.
You were made for it. Mm-hmm. I know that like gratitude and like Tayshia has talked about you just being such like a thankful man has been like really important. And, you know, one of the reasons that like she fell in love with you, do you do any like specific type of like gratitude mm-hmm. practices, or is it just something that you just like, you know, exude from your body like on a daily basis, or is it more of like a ritual of something that you do?
Yeah, I appreciate. I mean, look, I try to live in gratitude. Obviously, that's like one of my core beliefs. We have to be grateful. I have my daily routine that on my good days, like I'm up early in the morning. I'm meditating. I'm getting centered. I'm doing the things that I need to do in order to, you know, mm-hmm. walk out into the world and be a human. And for me, like. You know, whether you believe in like God, for me is like it's a verb, it's an action word, you know, like you
for sure.
I'm able to show that in my daily life. And certainly I've done gratitude lists, and I believe in the power of like pen to paper and writing and that kind of thing. So, I don't know. That's what I got there.
I have a question about, cause I know like living with an addict, and Mike always says, he's like, I can't say I'll never do this again. And he's like, right, is that's kind of like you said, like in program, like you can't say you'll like you're gonna live like you'll never
right.
do to like you want to, you. How do you say it? So I don't know.
It's there's just no. Unfortunately, being an addict, you lose the privilege of using the word never or claiming that you'll never do something again.
So because of that, you know, sometimes I have that fear because there have been a few relapses, and you know, and he kind of knows like where I'm at. Like there's only so much personally that I think the other. Person that's gone through it can go through where it's just like I have nothing left, right? Like there's So I'm curious, like, have you had those conversations with Tayshia about, you know, like, is she fearful of a relapse? Because that's my biggest fear is like, okay, we put in all this work and I'm like, I'm fearful for if there's a next one, because I can't do it anymore. I can't handle it anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I have everything out there, our life, our work, everything we do together. And it's like, well, I pray today he shows up, but it's hard. So it's like, has that been something that, you know, y'all have talked about with the fears that potentially come up around that? Or are you just, I mean, because you are 10 years strong in it, that you don't have really that fear, or she doesn't?
No, I mean, that's it's a real thing. I mean, I've heard about guys with 25 years going back out, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and for whatever reason, and life comes at you fast. Like, I don't, that's part of, I think, having a partner in life. You're going to go through trials and tribulations together. I mean, I have explained to her, and no offense to her or to you or anyone else who dates someone like myself, Mike, is that our recovery, like, for me, I'll speak to myself, like, my recovery must come first, right? Mm-hmm. And it has to, no matter what, and everything else kind of stems off of that. And when I'm living that way, I got a pretty good shot to stay in this thing. But we've had conversations about that and what that looks like. And, you know, I think she understands that if something was to happen down the line, like, we would have to really have a conversation and see what that looks like. And there's different degrees to a relapse. Like, mm-hmm. did I go out on a tough day and mm-hmm. get hammered because I was feeling sorry for myself, or did I, you know, end up, you know, with a needle in my arm, you know, yeah, like, and everything yeah. in between.
Sure. So setting that's kind of like, you know, we have certain, the boundaries and the circles and circle of recovery, but
yeah. And what I've told Jana, I was like, at least for me, you'll see the writing on the wall before it gets to that point, before it gets to that, you know, blow up inner circle, step outside the marriage again. Like, it's going to be a transitional thing for me. It's not
yet. I hope not.
No, yeah. You hope not. But just the way I am with my emotions now, and you being able to read me like a book and asking me what's wrong or are you okay before I even have the intelligence to express it, like, you read me like a book. Mm-hmm. There's one question that I remember, the question I was going to ask earlier, Zach, before we let you go, and it was about family. And you're talking about, you know, you have a great family and all that stuff, and you're commending your significant others, it is the people around you, those are the real heroes, and, you know, guys like our people like us in our lives that have been able to find recovery. I know that my parents went through, and maybe still at times go through, periods of guilt and shame where they almost want to blame themselves. And I've said this numerous times on this show and in other interviews, where I'm like, what I explained to my parents is, like, you could take, say I was a twin and we had the same life experience, it went through the same things, the same memories or whatever, he or she could turn out completely different than I did. He or she could have went in a different direction, could have handled feelings a different way, regardless of, you know, us being raised the exact same way. So did your parents ever express that to you? Like, did they feel responsible in a way? And how did you kind of, you know, mend that?
There's a couple of things. Through my work, I've really become grateful for my family, because I think in the grand scheme of things and looking at all the families I've worked with, my family's actually pretty healthy, you mm-hmm. know, and like, there's a lot of families out there that struggle. And one of the things I try to tell not just my family, but the families that we work with, is this whole, it sucks. Like, this whole recovery thing sucks and treatment thing sucks, because there's just no playbook. Like, you got someone with cancer, you got someone with diabetes, you got someone, like, here you go. This is what you got to do. And you do these things and you support them and you love them and you bake them cakes and hopefully they, you know, get well. But with this thing, it's like, you know, parents can do everything right and still, mm-hmm. you know, being going to their kid's funeral. And that's just a reality of this world we live in. So for me, it's just important to let my parents know that I love them and that I'm grateful for them. One of my favorite parts of the entire season, if you will, which I don't even like to think of it like that because it was real life for me, was the opportunity to sit there and just tell my mother, you know, like, what she has meant to me, because she will be there when shit is going wrong, but she'll never take credit when things are going right, you know, and like, mm-hmm. so trying to let her know how much she's meant to me in my journey. But yeah, parents always feel guilty, and it's one of the hardest things to live through, because at the end of the day, Mike, like, I know you're not a bad guy. I know I'm not a bad mm-hmm. guy, but like, we do things that make us look like bad people. So.
Yeah.
You got anything else?
No, ladies? You're just such a good dude. Thank you for sharing your story and your journey. And I just, yeah, I appreciate you. And, you know, I look at you and Mike, and I think you guys are, you guys are so incredibly strong and brave to be sharing your story and putting it out there, and just know how many people you're helping. So
where are you guys at? We
live in Nashville. Where do you live?
Okay. I'm in New York in the city, but okay. When things open up, I hope to cross paths, you know?
Oh, we definitely will.
That would be awesome. Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, cool. Where can our listeners find you, Zach?
I think my Instagram handle is ZACW Clark. Yeah. And,
that's why we love them.
Release Recovery's release, like let go, releaserecovery.com. And then our nonprofit is releaserecoveryfoundation.org. Call the main line, hit us up. My email is zach@releaserecovery.com. I respond to emails, like if it's an email of purpose, not if you're just saying hi and you saw me on the show.
Do you know how many emails you're going to get now?
Oh, right.
Yeah. It's all good. It's all good. We're handling them.
Your Instagram is ZW Clark.
Oh. There you go. Maybe my Twitter.
You are so funny.
And that's how I know you're my kind of guy, yeah, right there.
Because Mike doesn't have social media. I only make him do social media once a week on mine, Mike Mondays. And then I'm like, give me a day off. So, but thank you so much, Zach. Appreciate it, and hope to see you in either New York or Nashville.
All right, guys. Peace and love. See you
Thanks,
soon.
Zach. Thanks, okay, Zach. Bye-bye. Appreciate you, brother.
Bye. Later.
Oh, he was so sweet.
Oh my gosh. Like, just, I mean, I knew he was going to be like that, you know? He just like the same, that's how you know somebody's so cool, is when they're like the same person no matter what, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah. I mean, he's just like he's so confident.
Yes. Very confident, very comfortable. And it just naturally oozes out of him. Mm-hmm. You can experience it even through a computer screen. Mm-hmm.
I feel like you guys would be really good friends.
Yeah, we'd be bros.
Mm-hmm. We'd be bros. Oh
my God, and you and Tayshia would totally love each other.
And then, like, because, you know, Pittsburgh Pam, you know, like, you can come over too.
We'd
and
we have
can
just so much fun.
Hang. Let's take a break, and then let's go to some emails. Mark, what do you got for us?
Okay, this is a heavy one. This is from Anonymous. I emailed a couple of years ago and told you about discovering my husband's sex addiction. Ever since then, we went to counseling, and he even connected with Mike at the beginning. Things had been better, but about a year ago, he stopped counseling, and we've had some rocky times, but it seemed to still be on the path to trust being regained. Fast forward to recently, we bought our first home. Now we have a 2.5-year-old, and I'm 8 months pregnant. 2 days ago, I received a message I had been hoping to never see.
Oh, no.
It was a woman telling me with proof of screenshots that she's been seeing my husband for a few months and apologizing for not knowing he was married. I'm at a complete loss. I'm due with our second child in 3 weeks. I now have a beautiful home that I don't know how to care for or live in on my own. What the hell do I do? I stopped setting expectations long ago and knew this was a possibility, but I am still in shock. I know it wasn't done to intentionally hurt me, but obviously I'm heartbroken. Looking for any advice you have to offer. I'm pretty certain I can't stay in this marriage as he didn't follow through with the things I had asked.
My heart breaks for you, because it is the worst when you feel betrayed again and to see that come up. And I can't even imagine being pregnant, almost due. Like, that just broke my heart. Do you remember talking to him? I mean, I know you've talked to a few dudes.
Yeah, I would have to look back.
I mean, it sounds like he maybe didn't do the, like, kind of like what you and Zach talked about. Like, he didn't do the treatment, you know, like, because, like you kind of said, counseling, sometimes you need the bigger push to.
It's like you have to get out of reality to start experiencing reality. Almost like you have to get out of the world and just go into this place of just constant spiritual introspection to figure out this stuff.
Can I play devil's advocate though, just for a second?
Yeah.
because if I was her, I would say, well, I mean, you went to treatment. You almost had someone show up at the hotel room a year, almost a year and a half, 2 years later. So then clearly treatment didn't work.
Well, that.
Do you see what I'm trying to like? So it's like, what?
Yeah, well, you're making it black and white, which I understand. But it's unfortunately, it's not. It's not. There's not, you know, just like Zach was saying on the thing, it's like there's not a playbook for this. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like, all right, if you go to inpatient treatment, then you're good. You know what I mean? It's something you live with for the rest of your life. It's a disease you live with for the rest of your life. So, you know, but that's part of the thing, too. That was my biggest knock on the treatment I went to was they don't. All you do is talk about yourself and figure out your own shit. Mm-hmm. And then you step out into the world and you get your teeth kicked in by reality.
Wait, can we just talk about that for just 1 second before we get back to this email? Because I'll never forget the phone call that you made to me when you got out of rehab. And I quote, "Hey, where are you at? I need my computer." And I was like, "What? I'm sorry. Excuse me?" And you go, "I need my computer. It's mine, Jana. I have a right to have my stuff." And I'm like,
"That's not the first."
Pretty much. And you're like, "No." And you go, "I was like, well, we need to download things." And you're like, "I have." And then you started to go like, "I have my rights. I have this." And I'm like, "You don't have." Because I'm like broken over here.
Because they teach you about boundaries. But again, they talk about your own self-care and not the people that you've destroyed.
Yeah.
And so I come out like, "Listen here, lady. I got boundaries.
I've got boundaries." And I'm.
Jana's like, "Go f*** your boundaries."
I was like, no. I get a few MFers in there.
So there's that learning curve to come back into reality after you're in this safety pink cloud bubble of, you know, inpatient rehab. But
okay, but back to this girl though.
Right.
I mean, obviously she wanted to work on the. Obviously she was willing to stay in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally understand when you said, "I don't know if I could stay in this marriage now." And that's the same thing that I kind of felt when, you know, when we, you know, when that relapse happened and I found out I was pregnant with Jace. Like, I totally get that feeling. Having said that, if you're not out now, I don't feel like you're going to get out because you still are holding hope that maybe he can change, which is why I kind of always stayed too, because you're like holding hope. But you have to, you're going to need to, if you want to stay, because you love him, obviously, you have another baby on the way with him, you're going to have to set real clear boundaries if you haven't already. Does that make sense? Like, she's going to have to be like, "Look, you go to treatment." Kind of like what I said to you. I was like, "Go figure your stuff out and you need to go check into treatment," which is so hard for a mom that's about to have a baby.
I know.
A toddler at home. But I mean, maybe that's their last ditch hope to maybe save their marriage. I don't know. Pam, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've, you know, dealt with this as a child and, you know.
Wait, you're.
My mom.
Cheated?
No, just, you know, like the whole boundaries and like addiction and things. Sure. And so, yeah, like my mom finally after so many times was like, you know. She had two little kids, you know, the same thing, like what had no, you know, house. And but she there was too many boundaries broken constantly and she did leave.
There's a point when you're just like, you know, you're done.
Yeah.
You know, like it gets to the point where like I'm done. And and my friends and always said, like, you'll just know. It'll just be like you're done. Having said that, something has to happen here where she sees some kind of. Something that he's, I think, willing to do to fight for the marriage. Because clearly he's an active addiction.
And it's got to be significant.
Oh, well, that's what I mean, like treatment.
Like,
or something.
And if it's not because of the life situation they're in with a baby on the way and she doesn't want to add even more stress or pain, I mean, that's her decision to make up. But whatever boundary she puts in place, as long as it's not harmful or belittling or disrespectful to him,
like what?
Like,
you can't leave the house.
Like you can't do anything at all except for go to work and come. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you still have to have some understanding of whatever. But I'm not saying go out to the bars. I'm not saying do anything social like that. But if he wants to go and just have a beer at a buddy's house or something, and Life 360 needs to be on the phone.
Covenant Eyes.
Covenant Eyes.
No more social media.
Yeah, no social media. Wipe out anything that can be an outlet for that. So he is put in this lane, and it, as a guy, especially who's someone in active addiction and doing stuff, he's going to be defiant towards it. Probably he's going to have issues. He's going to feel like, I feel like a child. Well, you're acting like a child. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's that I had to deal with and overcome for a long time.
Mark, I feel like you got something, boo.
That's just the thing. Every path I go down is a dead end.
Mm.
Like, she needs to focus on herself. Well, she can't. She has a 2-year-old and a baby on the way. Mm-hmm. She needs to cut him off completely. Well, she can't, because they're his kids too. Mm-hmm. She needs to figure out if he wants to be in this or not. No, she doesn't. It's up to her, because he's messed up so many times. So mm-hmm. it's so out of my realm of expertise, even after listening to Zach and after knowing you guys for so many weeks, I still have no idea what to tell this poor woman, mm-hmm. except that she needs to somehow find a way to figure out what she wants in life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's more about her, you know. Because
yeah,
I
it's got to
like,
be.
Yeah, yeah.
Go to mom's house.
Mm-hmm. That's what my mom did.
And just hang there for as long as you can, mm-hmm. and let him figure out his stuff. Does that mean he misses the birth of his child? Yeah, maybe. But I guess that's on him.
Mm-hmm. I'm really sorry, babe. I'm sorry. I.
Yeah, that was just, it sucks, and so. Like, but Mark is saying, it's your call, it's your decision on what you want, and we know it's not easy, and so we're just kind of talking through options that you have.
Because she is stuck with him for life in some way. Yes. Maybe correct. Not in a relationship, but as the father of her kids, he's going to be around forever. So what does that become? What does that turn into? Maybe we wait a couple of months and let everything settle down before we kind of have a conversation.
And what did, you know, what Jana's therapist told her is, like, was it no major life decisions in the first 6 to 12 months? Mm-hmm. No major life decisions. So that's the thing. I think she needs to realize, let the storm settle. She doesn't have to make the decision right now.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Nothing's going to change if you make the decision right now.
But if you are going to considering, just like, he has to go by those boundaries of getting off social media, Life 360 on the phones, Covenant Eyes on the computers. And that's not to baby them or be their parent. That's just safety. Protection and for safety for both of you.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll be thinking of you, and please email us and let us know how we can help you more.
And if you like me to talk to him again, then
have him reach out again.
Have him reach out or email our, what's our iHeart email?
winddown@iheartradio.com.
Boom. So yeah, if your husband wants to email us there, iHeart team will get that to me, and we'll go from there.
Do we have any other ones, Mark?
We do. Melissa.
Is it a total downer?
The bottom line is, she has a 19-month-old son with her husband. She wants baby number 2, but husband is dead set on not having another. She says, I can't imagine my son being an only child and being alone at holiday events and always needing daycare or a play date for social interaction. I bring it up every few months, but it always ends up with me sobbing and him telling me no. He's embarrassed by the person he was when my son was a newborn and our marriage almost didn't survive. He's afraid he'll become that awful person again and our marriage won't survive the second time. I can't accept that he's accepting the behavior and not willing to work on it and try for the sake of my needs of being a mother. How do I navigate this? Mm-hmm. Rough week in the emails.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit more to this one. I mean,
he's embarrassed by the person he was.
He's saying he wasn't a good person when they had the newborn, and he doesn't want to be that person again. But to me, that's kind of like a, you know, an excuse to something else. I think there's a little bit more deeper than that.
Yeah, it's 100% work he needs to do. He needs to man the fuck up.
But, you know, if it's not something he wants, though, I mean, I think,
yeah,
you know,
that's
like
different.
You say,
that's different than saying he doesn't want to be the person he was when their first son was a newborn.
Sure, then work on yourself.
Yeah, he's
right.
Saying he doesn't want another kid. He's like turning it now into all about him,
right?
Which is not fair.
And saying that this newborn had that much effect on him negatively, which sucks to hear.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Like, that's not encouraging. So, how do you navigate it?
if you're under 32, divorce them. If you're, you still got time to find someone else.
If you're over, you got to do some therapy, just, man.
Do some therapy. Couples and then
therapy there.
Just hold them a little tighter when you guys have sex. Bridgerton is ass.
Bridgerton.
Yeah, I would try to get a third party involved here, because nothing you say, Melissa, will be able to will enlighten him. Unfortunately, from the sounds of it, he's stuck in his shit around this, so he needs a third party to talk this out.
We agree, and we also are going to choose the Bridgerton Act.
Bridgerton Act.
Bridgerton Act.
Great show, guys. Pittsburgh Pam, thanks for joining us.
Always happy to be with you.
All right, guys. See you next week.
Later.